Today's program was brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, the brand new co-working space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from. A curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic. While it's easy for us to focus on famous dishes, we often don't give the spotlight to the lesser-known funkier flavors of Asian cuisines. You may be familiar with some fermented Asian food staples like soy sauce and kimchi, which we've discussed in past episodes, but we'll be taking a look at some less famous fermented and or preserved foods that are common to the Chinese pantry. To help us learn more about some of these delicious flavors and foods, we have Calvin Ng from the Nam Hoa family in the studio with us. Welcome to the show, Calvin.
What's good? Thanks for having me.
So, a quick little intro on Calvin before digging into it. Born and raised in Brooklyn, Calvin studied and honed his culinary skills at Johnson & Wales University in Providence, Rhode Island. Most recently, Calvin worked at Dig In at both Madison Square Park and the Test Kitchen. He was previously the head chef at Nam Hoa Nolita, but is currently taking a break from the fast casual restaurant scene and working alongside Jonathan Wu of Nam Hoa 2. And you listeners might recognize Jonathan from season 2 when we chatted about seasonal Chinese vegetables. That's episode number 23. Go check it out if you haven't yet. So in today's episode, Calvin will be sharing what fermented and preserved oddities, so to speak, you can find in his fridge. And we'll make sure to share a pic of that on our Instagram later, as well as his experiences as a Chinese-American chef. But first, we like to kick off the show by reviewing the best things we ate in the past week. So, Calvin, I'm going to go first so you have a moment to think.
Sounds good.
So, it was Thanksgiving last Thursday, and while I didn't have a traditional Thanksgiving meal, I did get a great leftovers interpretation the day after. So, I had turkey in the form of turkey tacos, where the turkey was like shredded like carnitas, and we added pinto beans, onion, cheese, scallions, and cranberry sauce in a taco, and surprisingly that goes really well together.
That sounds sick.
Yeah, cranberry sauce in a taco. Who knew?
I'd be down to eat that.
Yeah. Yeah, how was your Thanksgiving, Calvin, and what did you have?
My Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I mean, we were closed, so we had the day off, so mm-hmm. I just spent it with my family. Nothing crazy.
Do you do, like, American Thanksgiving?
Yeah, definitely American-style Thanksgiving. I just don't really fuck with turkey too much, mm-hmm. so I just bought, like, a breast and a thighs, made a roulade. And just cook that up with
okay,
a couple,
that already
couple
sounds
sides.
Fancy, 'cause you said
it's not.
So what's the best thing you had last week? Was it part of your Thanksgiving meal or something else?
I actually ate at Winsun on Sunday. Ooh. For like the 10th time.
Yeah. Those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trig and Josh do dope stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I rarely revisit restaurants, but Winsun is just one of those that I have to.
So good. What did you have there that you really liked?
Always get the eggplant, always get the big chicken bun, always get the jajangmyeon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are like the staples when I go.
Yum. What a great meal. So Calvin, let's start by having you tell us about your culinary journey. Where are you from? How did you get to where you are now? And how did you fall into the food industry?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you already went through a little bit. I was born here in Brooklyn, New York, born and raised, but like Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, so like south part of Brooklyn that no one ever goes to or visits, kind of deal. I grew up always loving food. I grew up loving working with my hands. I just never really thought I'd be pursuing a career in it. But when it was time to kind of decide what I wanted to do.
When was that?
Just after high school. When just mm-hmm. deciding what college you want to go to and stuff like that. And then I was looking through schools, and then Johnson & Wales was like the only school I applied to. So I was like, if I didn't go into here, then I was just going to go to a trade school like ICE, ICC, and just take up some cooking classes there and just go from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up getting in, fortunately. I told my mom I was going there for hotel management and hospitality. Mm-hmm. But I knew all along I was going there for culinary arts.
Aha, Trixie.
Yeah. So I ended up finishing up a little early. I finished up in 3 years. And then after that, I went on to study abroad in Southeast Asia for a little bit. And then ended up back here in New York where it all started.
Oh, cool. And so, tell us about like what you've been doing at Nomwa Nolita. Like what was your cooking style there, I guess, and influences as like a head chef, and now like what you're doing at Nomwa too.
Yeah, I mean, fast casual scene was kind of like a thing I was really into. I thought that's what I really wanted to do, so I just wanted to work in that field a little bit more. So I did that with Dig In, and then I did that with Nomwa Nolita. Yeah, I'm not really into that anymore,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm grateful that I get to work with Jonathan Wu at Nomwa too now, because he's a super smart dude. Crazy talented, so I feel like I learn a lot from him over there.
Yeah, that's great. How do you identify your cooking? Being a Chinese American, do you bring like a lot of like Chinese like background and influences to your cooking, mm-hmm. or like more so stuff that you've learned and pick up at school or at Dig In?
Yeah, I feel like that's a tough question because I feel like I'm still so young. I'm just trying to find my voice and my identity in food, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely try to use my background and my upbringing to influence the stuff that I do the most. Just by being Chinese and like by being an American, I feel like it allows me to be creative in both of these worlds.
Yeah. I remember eating at Nomwa Nolita while you were there, and I was really blown away by like the presentation and the taste of like the snow pea dumpling you had. That was like really pretty and really, I feel like a new take on old dim sum.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
So do you like try to, seek out that kind of like interpretation and like do you eat a lot of dim sum or like Chinese food to have that foundation?
I definitely eat a lot of Asian food in general, because I feel like a lot of countries and cuisines share a lot of the same ideas and variations of ingredients and stuff like that. So I definitely use like eating out as like an experience to kind of get inspiration from.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I feel like you got to eat good food to make good food.
Yeah. So do you eat out like all over, mainly the city, or like while on your travels?
Both. Mm-hmm. I feel like I eat out pretty often. Spend most of my money on eating out.
Yeah, same.
But it's like research, so it's all good. I don't mind.
Great. So we'll talk about your fridge next. And thanks for, you know, opening up the contents to our audience. So we'll basically go through like several funky items. And as we like talk about them, if you could speak to like where geographically typically like this food is made, how it's preserved or fermented, what are the different ways to eat it, you know, how you use it, and then on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the most funky, how funky you would say it is.
Sounds good.
So, okay, you have here on your list fermented bean curd. So what is that?
Ooh, we're starting off real funky. This is like, a lot of people compare it to soy cheese or tofu cheese. It's literally just like blocks of tofu. It's fermented in rice wine, salt, sometimes other spices. But it could be pretty, pretty pungent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's kept in a jar?
Yeah, it's in a jar in its own brine.
Oh, very, mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. Yeah. would you say it's like typically Chinese?
Yeah, mainly. But Koreans also have a version. I'm sure other cuisines also have a version, but it's definitely very popular in Chinese cuisine. Mm-hmm. You use it for stir fries, you use it in sauces, kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Have you used it in any of your dishes?
I mean, I've used a lot of these things as like salt, or like umami enhancers in a way.
Yeah.
Kind of like seasoning a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel like if you use it subtly, it'll be really useful. It adds a lot to a dish.
Yeah. I feel like I've had this when I've eaten like plain congee, maybe. And is it like added as a side?
I haven't seen that, but that does sound good.
Okay, that
though.
Could be my like northern Chinese weird. Like, I don't think a whole cube would work. Maybe it's like a quarter or like a little, a little bit from your chopsticks.
There's like some spicy ones. I think that's like my favorite one to use.
Mm-hmm. How funky would you say it is? Is it like, you know, something really unfamiliar for a non-Chinese audience?
Yeah, I'd give that one a 4. that's pretty funky.
Okay, so next is shrimp paste. Like, what is that? What does that look like?
Shrimp paste is kind of purpley looking. I mean, there's a lot of different versions. I know in Thailand, they like to use a dry cube-like shrimp paste. That exists out there. Chinese, I just have a jar in the fridge of like a purpley looking paste.
Mm-hmm.
So that's literally just fermented shrimp with salt and then it's mashed up into a paste.
And how do you eat that?
I like to rub it on like proteins.
Okay.
And like steam it or like mix it into minced pork dishes and steam that kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
when I was little, my mom used to fuck with me and say that like if I didn't finish my rice, like I would have an ugly wife in the future. So I would just take this straight up on my rice and eat it up.
Oh my god.
So that's how I eat it.
Got it. For beauty, for your future partner. Okay.
Exactly. We'll see if that's true.
And how funky is this one?
Out of all the ingredients that I've given you, probably the most funky.
Okay.
This is like
straight
a 5. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And also you said purpley paste. So I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, this is funky.
Okay. A different version of shrimp then. What about dried shrimp? What does that look like and how does that taste?
Well, this is pretty common, I think, all over Asia. It's probably like the most common dried seafood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Asians love dried seafood. You got oysters, you got scallops.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all types.
Are you talking about like large chopped up like dry shrimp or the little mini baby ones? Or like
both? The mini baby ones are like the ones you'll see most in food.
Yeah.
You'll see it in like sticky rice or like rice rolls or turnip cakes. Like I use it in an XO sauce that I do. Just to add like that.
It really enhances flavor, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of these things do that. It's like part of the savory umami like
exactly. Factor. And this is just like a concentrated shrimp flavor.
Yeah.
So it's gotta be good.
So I have a funny anecdote about this. I went to Hot Pot with a friend that was, you know, allergic to shrimp. And so we told and this was in Chinatown, New York, and we told the waitress, hey, you know, she's allergic to seafood, so let's not bring anything out that's like seafood based. We won't order any seafood so she can participate. Mm-hmm. And as we're eating our first bite, like, of course, out comes these little baby shrimps in the broth. And we're like, yo, this is totally seafood. And the waitress was just like, no, that's not. What that's just mean? Like so foundational to this broth that, you know, she didn't even like think twice about that. So our poor friend had to watch us eat.
Damn, that's sad.
Yeah. Okay, so we're moving into a different category. Fermented black beans.
Ooh, yeah, these are little salty little bites. They look like little black bugs in the food.
Oh, very appetizing.
I used to pick them out of all my food when I was little.
Just because, like, visually, it was not. Yeah, it looked like
little bugs.
Okay.
But now it's like, I love it. I put in so many things. Like in stir fries, when steaming stuff, over fish, over, or like black beans and clams is like such a classic dish.
Yeah, it really is. Like, why is that? Why this, like, black bean thing?
I feel like it just and adds seafood. So much flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a little pop of umami. Cause it's kind of, it reminds me of like a caper.
Oh, that's a good description.
And capers? Capers go with fish.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so black beans, seafood.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of goes. But it's not like a Latin black bean. It's it's a black soybean. That's just
from good clarification.
Yeah. That's a difference.
And is it funky?
Nah, it's like a one.
Okay.
That's normal now.
Except for the look of the bugs thing.
No legs.
Okay, so we have a couple eggs. Number one, salted eggs. Like, please describe what you mean by that. And then century eggs.
Yeah, so salted eggs. I feel like a lot of Asian cuisines and cultures have this. I actually never bought this. It's just something my mom always made at home.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I know a lot of times people use like a salt brine kind of deal and just soak that in a salt brine for a couple weeks.
So is that like a raw egg or a cooked egg?
Yeah, so a raw egg in a salt brine left outside.
Oh, okay.
Like not in the fridge. And then after 2-3 weeks, depending on how salty you like it, you just pop it in the fridge and steam it when you're ready to eat it. Once again, that just like, I just eat that with my dinner on the side.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you can't eat a whole one that's mad salty.
Right.
Probably like a half.
Unless you want like a really beautiful wife and then you're going for like 2 bowls of rice or something.
Yeah, weird. Then I'll eat the whole egg.
Again, I feel like this is a familiar ingredient for me when I'm eating my plain congee.
I've done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need that.
Okay. So, what do you think about like the funkiness level? The fact that, you know, it's like a raw egg in the brine left outside.
Maybe the process is a little more funky. Yeah.
Yeah. When you say it out loud. Yeah.
The final product, I don't think, is funky.
Yeah. Because it actually looks like kind of a regular egg, but with a more saturated yolk, would you say, when you're cutting it open?
But yeah. So sometimes it's with a duck egg or a chicken egg or even quail egg. Yeah. But at home, I just use chicken eggs.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So have you used this? I mean, like made this on your own too now?
But yeah, my mom does it without the brine. We just kind of, we rub the egg with Shaoxing wine, salt it heavily and just wrap it up.
Oh, yeah. It seems like really basic.
Same deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real basic. Two ingredients, eggs and salt.
Okay. So what's the other version that you're talking about? Century.
Century eggs. Yeah. This is something that. It's probably you probably eat this in congee too then. Eat all these things in congee. Yeah, century eggs are a little different, a little funkier. Mm-hmm. It's like a gelatin-y.
Yeah, let's describe what this looks like for our audience, because, yeah.
Yeah, so the outside, the whites will basically turn black, brown, dark brown, like gelatin-y, textury looking. Inside is like a creamy green yolk. It doesn't sound very good. I like it.
Yeah. So my boyfriend tried this for the very first time. And number one, he was like freaked out. Well, so he's like from California, like San Diego dude. And he's never seen this before. And he was like freaked out by, first of all, how it looked. Because, you know, as an egg, the colors are completely different. It's like,
yeah, it's usually
green eggs and ham from Dr. Seuss.
Unsafe to eat black food.
Right. Yeah. And then it does have a more, would you say, like, metallic flavor? Or, like, you know, describe the flavor. Like,
yeah, it's sulfury.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, irony, kind of, I would say.
Oh, so why do you like it?
Honestly, it's probably just, like, nostalgic. And I grew up eating it. Mainly, I enjoy the texture. I can't tell you and say, like, I enjoy the flavor. Mm-hmm. But when it's mixed with other things, I feel like it's really good. It brings out good flavors. Like a lot of times I'll just eat it as a snack with like pickled veggies. And like the vinegar and the brine from the pickles will help it out a lot. I think it makes it taste really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or just in congee.
Yeah, why not? All right, so we're going to take a quick break as everyone kind of like settles their stomachs and palates.
Bogart Street is finally open and ready for Bushwick. 100 Bogart is a brand new, state-of-the-art co-working space that provides turnkey workspaces, including open layout desks, meeting spaces, and furnished private offices. Members have access to top-notch amenities such as custom furniture, high-speed internet, spacious kitchenettes with coffee and tea, printers, scanners, and much more. Alongside their professional work environment, 100 Bogart also provides exclusive educational programming for any curious entrepreneur. Heritage Radio Network has made their new office home at 100 Bogart and will host many events there in the future. For more information about their co-working space, visit 100bogart.com and become a member to network, create, and educate. 1-8-6-2-8-2. Welcome back.
Okay, so I'm just going to recap what Calvin has in his fridge. So we've got fermented bean curd, shrimp paste, dried shrimp, fermented black beans, salted eggs, and century eggs. So Calvin, what would you say is like the funkiest of all of them?
Definitely shrimp paste.
Shrimp paste, yeah. Still?
I feel like that's like on the same level as like stinky tofu type of funky.
Nice.
On like the smelly level.
So did you grow up eating all of these things, or were some of them kind of like picked up along the way?
No, I definitely grew up right out the womb eating this.
Oh, great.
Still eating it to this day.
Yeah. And so when you're like purchasing it, if you're going to like an Asian grocery, is there anything to like look out for? You know, expiration dates, does that even matter?
I feel like for a lot of these things, there's just so many brands and companies out there that make these products.
Yeah.
It just comes down to like what brand you end up really liking. Mm-hmm. It's like the certain brands of soy sauce, certain brands of hoisin sauce. And there's definitely shitload of brands of all these products here.
Right.
And you just got to really experiment and try them, see what you like, or even make it yourself.
Oh, fair.
Yeah.
So also in this, you know, more adventurous culinary landscape that we're like dealing with now, do you feel like there's a different perception attitude towards these ingredients by people who are not Chinese and not Chinese American? I know you know, came out of the womb eating these things, so it's easy for you, but how do other people perceive this? And some of your, like, you know, people who go to your restaurants too.
Yeah, it's definitely rough if you're just like eating it or smelling it straight out the jar. But I feel like if you're preparing it with certain things that it pairs well with, or like cooking it in small amounts, or like little, like introducing it slowly to your food and palate. I feel like it'll add a lot of flavor that you never knew you could get from that, from just opening the jar.
Yeah. Have you seen some like interesting reactions by people, or like have, you know, they asked you, oh, what's that taste? Or, you know, what is that thing you put in here that makes this taste so good?
Yeah. A lot of times it's like, they don't even know what it is or like what's in it. It's just like that X factor that's adds so much salty, briny, umami type of flavor to dishes that just fermented products give.
Yeah. And do you feel we'll be seeing, or are we already seeing this stuff in like the everyday American fridge, or is that like, are we far from that?
Nah, no way yet. maybe like 10 years, it'll be like the miso paste.
Right, right. Definitely. Miso is something that's a lot more common.
Yeah, but not shrimp paste. Shrimp paste, like the vegan stuff, maybe like fermented bean curd. will make an appearance.
Right. And to that audience, it might be more familiar because they're so used to like soy products.
Exactly. It's like people call it soy cheese.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of sounds funky.
Cheese is funky.
Yeah, there you go. That's why. And I guess like growing up as a Chinese American and like in Brooklyn, were you ever like picked on for eating this kind of food, or were you in like a very, you know, supportive Chinese American community?
No way. I feel like I'm definitely more proud now than I have ever been.
Okay.
Of being Chinese American, because I mean, I went to a school that had very few Chinese people or Asians in general, so I never took that.
Yeah, did you bring
lunch?
Yeah, did you bring lunch? What did you bring for lunch?
I was a kid who rolled up with like a ham and cheese sandwich type of deal.
Right. Here I am to assimilate.
Yeah, I'm trying to fit in.
Got it. Yeah. So when did that shift happen for you?
Honestly, probably when I got into food. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's...
Like at college or afterwards?
Definitely after. I mean, in college, you don't really know what the fuck you want to do or what you're doing. You're just trying to learn everything.
Yeah.
I mean, after is really when you... when you try to figure out what path you want to take. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like food is just like my biggest connection to my heritage and my culture. I mean, it's what I know best about being Chinese. Mm-hmm. I barely speak it. I mean, I speak it not that great, but food is definitely my biggest thing.
And then I guess like, what is it like cooking with all the, you know, Chinese chefs in the Namwa family? Are you like learning how to use some of these things from them? And are you then also like influencing like other chefs that are like in your network who are not Chinese?
Yeah. I mean, me, like I said, me and Jonathan pick each other's brain all day long about food.
So he's familiar with all of this stuff.
Yeah. He has all this stuff in his restaurant and he uses a lot of it on the regular in his menu. So we talk about these all the time. We talk about chefs using it all the time. We talk about where you could find other products and stuff like that, who was using it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's just cool to have someone to talk to all day about something that so little people know or care about.
Yeah. No, this is really cool. 'Cause, I mean, for me, like going shopping at like, say, HK Mart in Chinatown, there's a whole aisle dedicated to this kind
of
stuff.
It's overwhelming, right?
Yeah, it is overwhelming. Yeah, so it's good to kind of like talk about it. And as someone who, you know, doesn't even have that kind of like Chinese background coming into it, it's like, what is this aisle?
It's like 10 different brands of one thing.
Right.
Like, which one do I get?
So tell us what's next for you. What, I know you're working with Jonathan at Namwa 2. But what, do you have other projects, or like, where do you see yourself next?
Honestly, who knows what's next? I kind of stopped associating certain goals with certain ages.
Okay.
That's like kind of thing that I was doing for a little bit. I was like, yeah, by 24, I want this, 25, I want that. I mean, like 24, I said I wanted a restaurant, but then 24 is like around the corner. Mm-hmm. And that's not something I want.
You're still a baby. That's cool. You have the whole world ahead of you.
So much more to learn, see, and do.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Do you think you'll stay cooking Chinese American food or?
Yeah.
Or not?
Definitely. Definitely the path that I want to take and what I want to dive deeper into to learn more about. I feel like there's so much to learn. Like, China's huge.
Mm-hmm,
so many different regions and stuff like that to learn from.
Okay, so this might be like a hard question next, but when people say your name, what would you like to be known for? What do you think will be your food legacy?
I just want to be someone who is known for making moves in like this Chinese American food movement.
Yeah.
Without a, like a stacked up resume. I just feel like with like work ethic and like enough passion and drive, I feel like is all you need to be successful. You don't need all these Michelin stars under your belt, like working for all these crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure like experience is important as well, and I definitely agree, but I don't really feel like that's the only thing you need. I feel like work ethic is a big part of it.
Awesome. So that pretty much wraps up our show. Thank you so much, Calvin, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
For those who want to learn more about you, where can they find you online?
You can follow me on Instagram at Calvin Hungry.
Calvin Hungry.
Yeah.
Always hungry. Okay, great. So before we sign off, we wanted to let listeners know that we are raising money for the Truly Unique Heritage Radio Network. We're an independent, member-supported nonprofit radio station broadcasting from two recycled shipping containers in the back of Roberta's Pizza in Brooklyn. If you're a fan of East Meets West and want to support Heritage Radio Network so that they can keep bringing shows like this one to you for free, please do head on over to the Feast Meets West Facebook page, and you can make a contribution there. Every little bit will help HRN reach their 2017 goal. And lastly, we'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.